So hello.
Hello.
This is not going to be a cold open. This is going to be a hot open.
This okay? is hot.
Oh,
yeah.
I love
yeah.
it.
Let's I make it hot. It. Let's give it a little bit of a summer theme
okay.
on this hot open. Okay.
Oh, it's summer.
So here we are. So we're on the beach. And look at those waves. Beautiful, huh? Is that a surfer out there? That looks like Will Arnett. Will, get on in Will, here. We're doing a hot open. He's paddling in. He's paddling in.
Hey, you guys cool with the G-string?
Yeah.
It has no front.
Will, don't turn around. Don't turn around. Welcome to Smartless.
Smart.
Jay, did you sleep okay?
I slept like a log.
That's yeah. Well, that, you were missed last night.
Lemon bundt cake and Rice Krispies really put me down.
Oh, is
I
that?
Know,
did
I love
we
that.
Went back to the bundt cake, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whose was that? Was that yours, Shawnee?
No, that was a gift.
Oh.
That somebody else brought in.
Yeah, you were missed, Will.
I missed it. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I didn't come. I had a dinner with the boys.
Yeah.
By boys, I mean my sons. Not yeah, with exactly. my golf Thanks. Buddies or something. Yeah. Yeah, we had a nice, just my boys and me, which was really nice.
That's nice. Isn't that yeah. nice? Did you watch a movie?
No, we watched a little Sunday Night Football, and
yes.
Which was fun.
Yeah. All the snow.
And then we did, we do movie night at night before bed. For the littles like to watch a little movie. They call it movie night. Usually ends up being put a movie on in my room on the bed, and then it turns into fight. Everybody gets weapons.
Oh. Yeah.
And
you don't fall asleep right away?
So last night, Denny hadn't seen Star Wars, and he kept saying,
"What are you talking
This is
about?
The real movie." We're like, "I know." From moment one, he's like, "What's he doing? What's this guy doing?" They're in a desert. He literally at one point goes, "This is a great human, total human, pure moment." He goes, "As C-3PO and R2-D2 are walking on Tatooine, Sean, hold your boner." he goes, "That's a desert." And we go, yeah. And he goes, there's no sea there. And you go, no. He goes, I'm thirsty. it was so funny.
Funny.
Just right funny. In that moment to say that. So
wait, anyway. But back to football. God. Yesterday I was watching football too, and I don't understand why the guy, when they know they have a camera on them, they just hold one nostril and they blow it out the other way.
Yeah.
And it's so,
yeah.
They're always on camera, just blowing their nose out. It's like, just get a Kleenex.
Oh, you're right. They should go get Kleenexes on the side of the
Yeah, they hand them everything
Excuse me,
else.
Stop like the play. Excuse me, can I get a Kleenex?
But why do they all spit in baseball, too? I get that the chewing tobacco and stuff, but, you know, only half the guys are chewing tobacco now. It's just, it's like,
habit.
It's weird, like, I'm a male, check it out, I can spit. It's people on the street, too, that just, like, spit when they're, like, kind of uncomfortable, or they know eyes are on them. It's like, yeah, I'm a dude. But it's people on a fucking golf course do it. Guys, it's like, you're not a real man, guy. You know, we're just out here playing golf.
I was in Germany with Scotty on a vacation, and I spit in public. He didn't talk to me the rest of the day.
Yeah.
He's like,
what's the matter
what are you
with
doing?
You?
Yeah, we got a huge fight.
I'm like, now you, I just now you've got an escape valve. You know what I mean? If you think about it.
But like, why would, like, you know, you can swallow saliva. Like, it's built for that.
Yeah, but
know?
If you have to get it out, what do you do?
Yeah, but exactly. But what saliva is so bad that you've got to get it out, put it on the ground?
Here's an interesting
chewing tobacco.
Thing.
I get
here's,
it. But.
Here's the irony, is that knowing JB as well as I do, and the Sean, you and I know him almost as well as anybody. He could go either way with that. He could see somebody hork up, like have some spit and swallow it, and go, "Gross. Why don't you just get rid of it? Why would you? Am I right about that, JB?"
Yes. I could argue both
so
sides.
It's so true,
right?
Do you think if I was a lawyer, I would have? Would I have been a defense attorney or a prosecutor?
Both. You would have been both. you would have come in, "Your Honor, I'm representing both sides.
Because I don't want anyone's involvement."
No, and you don't want to be caught out being wrong in either way. So you're just like, "I'm going to cover both." You're like my dad does that. My dad goes, he'll make a point and go, blah, 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 blah. And you're about to make a point, and he'll go, "Having said that," and you're like, "Oh, you're going to argue the other side?"
We're going to get to our guests right now, but Jason told, I've never heard that story unless you told it, and I don't remember, and we don't have to tell it right now, but Jason was doing a play, and he bought the cast.
Oh my God, that story. I was trying to remember what story I told you last
night. God, it was so funny.
I think I've said that on this before.
Really? Maybe. I don't remember.
Just some horrible example of what a fucking monster I was in my early 20s.
Did we talk about last time the thing that we're not going to talk about yet? We did, right?
What's that?
Yes. No, yeah. Please don't even think about it.
We did, right?
What is that?
I don't know. I'm just going
the stuff that we're looking into doing with did we...
Oh, that, I don't know. You guys are in control.
We didn't actually talk about it, did we?
No, we're
planning on doing something. We're really excited. We don't want to say yet, but we are excited about something because we've had the three of us have talked to people have said to us like, hey, you should do something with the brand, as gross as that sounds.
Very gross.
And then right for a while we've sort of. And kind of like when we were thinking about going on tour, we're like, hey, should we do that? Blah, blah, blah. So then we were like, should we do something? And then we've sort of zeroed in on something that we are going to do within the Smartless world that we're really excited about.
Yeah.
We can't really say it yet. I'm sorry. We're not sort of teasing it on purpose to not make you guess. But it is something that we are excited about. And when it finally comes to fruition, so kind of bear with us, but it's something pretty cool and that feels really organic to what we do.
Right.
Right.
But first we're going to say hello.
Yes.
Ah, how about that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
We're huge fans of our guest today, not just his prolific work, but the man behind the empire is a dear friend to all of us. A self-proclaimed weird kid. His favorite holiday was Halloween. After graduating from Vassar, his career started as a real estate agent in Manhattan. Before working his way up at a major movie studio, today he's a three-time Academy Award nominated,
he's got a great
two-time
first name.
Primetime Emmy Award winning, and a three-time Peabody Award winning producer. His company, for which he is CEO and founder, is considered the driving force in one of the last genres to get people into the theaters. He's our brilliant friend, Jason Blum. Jason Blum, Blumhouse. Oh,
Jason
look at him.
Blumhouse. Hello.
Oh, he's got his
there.
Little warm jacket on. Look at him go.
We're doing this it. We're finally doing it.
This is a very, very important day for me.
This is. Everybody take it easy
so,
right now.
So, well, it's not probably the listeners who are as excited as I am. Because, you know, what I'd like to share, you know, with all your fans. By the way, I guess all your guests have been listening, like, the way not to sell your product is literally the last 5 minutes is exactly you basically said we're doing something someday we're going to tell you about it. I mean yeah. I've never yeah. I mean
stupid.
That was
we're stupid.
It was unbelievable. Which is why I'm very happy to be here to kind of help you with your chocolate bars. You know,
bars. Well, it's just like if you were like selling one of your movies, it's like buying a billboard and just having it just be black.
We might make a scary movie. It might come out someday, and I'm not telling you what it's called.
Yeah.
Listen.
By
the way, effective.
Yeah. But for my sister who may not know you but knows the name of your company, Blumhouse. Blumhouse makes all the hit horror films you've ever seen, and it's all because of you. Every horror film out there is basically, every hit horror
the
film
good
is
ones.
Basically a Blumhouse.
You're saying horror, right?
Horror, yeah.
Horror.
Thriller, horror.
Okay. Horror.
Scary.
Okay.
Yeah, I just got to get something off my mind first, though, before we start talking about horror. Because you guys are being really, you know, polite, which I appreciate, but I think it's important for all your gazillions of listeners to know that I know all of you individually.
Yes.
I've known Jason the longest, but you know, we have relationships, and I think it's important for everyone to know that individually over the last how long has Smartless been? 2 or 3 years?
5 years?
Four and a half years.
I've probably over the last 4 years sent a total of 15 emails, 5 to each of you, every 3 or 4 months, timed separately, begging to be
timed
on the show.
Separately.
Begging. The harshest response is Jason just doesn't reply.
Yeah, yeah.
Love to promote the new movie on Smartless, ghosting me.
No.
Not only that.
I don't think so. I changed my email address.
Which one? Not only emails and texts, you also have done individual lunches, dinners, and collective dinners.
And collective dinner, yes. Right. Lunches, collective dinners, and everyone in my family and everyone in my company knows this has been the golden chalice. So for me, I just need a moment to let this wash over me. Yes. Like, this is a pinnacle. Forget those dumb awards. This is this is a mountain I've been trying to climb for four and a half years. The Ted Sarandos, if you remember, when he went on, I said, you gotta put, they're gonna put me on now. It's been 2 years since Ted.
I love that Blum said, forget the dumb awards. He didn't say forget the money, because you never forget the money. But here's the one thing.
Don't forget the
Blum,
money.
Let me say this.
Don't forget the money.
Never forget the money. One is this. You've known Jason the longest, but we met longer ago than any of us.
Oh, no, that's true.
In the mid-90s, we had a dinner in which you spent 90% of it on the phone outside in the East Village with your former boss.
Yes, being berated.
Being berated. The other thing is, I noticed, you're wearing your jacket, and one of the reasons is because you've been sleeping outside. So
let's talk about that.
It's still not in profit.
Favorite. Yes. I am still, since the moment you showed me sleeping situation, Blum, I am obsessed with it. And people use obsessed, but I'm literally obsessed. Walk us through
too.
It.
I never,
walk us through it, please, if you can.
My grandmother lived in Northern California in Petaluma, where I still have that little house, and it was, you know, I don't know if it was before air conditioning, but she didn't have air conditioning, and they had these things, I guess in the 30s and 40s really is when it started, called sleeping decks. Mm. And you would just kind of put a mattress and sleep outside in the summer to stay cool. And when I went to go visit my grandmother, I used to always sleep outside on a little mattress in a sleeping bag on the sleeping deck.
Yeah.
And ever since that time, I've always wanted a house where I could sleep outside. And about 5 years ago, we got this house in Rustic Canyon, and I built a deck outside the bedroom, and we have a completely screened-in porch. There's no heat, and my wife and I sleep there every night. And it feels great.
And now people don't realize California, it actually really does get really, really cold.
Well, it gets cool at night.
Yeah.
48, 46 is about the coldest that it gets. I sleep with a hat. See my hat? I sleep with the hat on. And I sleep with, I have, you know, sweats and sweatpants, and I don't wear gloves.
What? And you don't need a sound machine, because right next to the sleeping deck is
a creek. There's a little creek.
Yeah,
so you hear a little creek. You have water, and it's right in the middle of Santa Monica.
I said to Blum, I go, and we were in there, and he was showing me, and I was just blown away. And I go, especially as a Canadian, I was really impressed. And I said, how do you sleep out here? And he goes, incredibly.
Yeah. Incredibly. Yeah.
But then he doubles down, because what happens as soon as you wake up from that freezing night?
Then I walk down. It's a balcony with an outdoor stairway, and I do a jump in my cold plunge very quickly, which is very trendy and pathetic, but I do it. Yeah. And then I take a...
It's 37 degrees?
It's at 37, but I don't... I used to stay in for a minute every morning.
Yeah.
And... Vivi Nevo stays in for a minute or something, and I used to stay in for a minute every morning, and then I started getting sick. Like, every 2 weeks, I was getting a different sickness, and I'm convinced it was because I was doing that. So now I just go in for, like, 5 seconds, wakes me up, and then I jump into a warm shower, and I'm on my way to school.
Now, couldn't all of this be solved by just opening the windows in your main bedroom?
Yeah, just open the windows.
Not the same at all.
Not the same.
Oh, not at all.
Not at all.
Because every so often, we sleep in the bedroom with all the windows open. It's not the same.
And Lauren's on board with all this. Does she do the cold plunge, too?
She does not do the cold plunge, but she loves sleeping outside, and we sleep outside together every night. She doesn't do the cold plunge, but...
Sean, you used to sleep outside... Right. Sorry. A Five Guys. Every time they open a new Five Guys, you'd sleep outside, waiting for it to open.
Yeah, I got so excited. I'd starve myself.
Jason, the eccentricities don't stop there. Let's explain to Tracy about the traffic situation and the parking situation in Los Angeles and how you've managed to circumvent that problem.
Okay,
right. But before that, and yes, I want to hear that. I just want to tell Tracy, like, you know, Insidious, Paranormal Activity, The Purge, Get Out. It goes on and on and on. I just want to get people.
These
up
are
to
films
speed.
That Jason has produced, is what you're trying to say.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. He's responsible for all of these.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Split, Halloween. You left
that's
on
right.
a couple
all
of
those.
Five Nights at Freddy's. Megan. Yeah.
That's right.
You left
the
on a couple
gift.
Of big ones. Yeah,
the gift, which Jason was in, right?
Most importantly, the gift.
So, but I say all that because you can accomplish all this because, to Jason's question, you have
a van. A van. Is that what you're talking about?
That you drive around in. Yes.
I'm obsessed with efficiency.
Yes.
And one of the things I was very fixated on is I've always kind of struggled with life in LA. And I was very hot and cold in LA. But one of the things I really don't like is driving and traffic and valet parking and parking and all of that stuff.
I
really much prefer public transportation. There was a while when I lived downtown that I took the subway in LA.
Yeah.
I would take an Uber. This is in LA. You take an Uber. Well, went right downtown. So you take an Uber to the stop in Santa Monica, and then take the train, and then I could walk to my house.
Wow,
That's a very LA way to take the subway. But anyway, the best thing.
This van.
And I'm in my second generation of van, but when I always said if I made a hit movie, I was going to do this for myself. And the first hit I had was Paranormal Activity, and I went right out. I bought myself the used Chevy Astro. For $10,000. Now, at that time, this is about 12 years ago, there were very few minivans with a flat bottom, like a handyman. All of the minivans had a hump.
Nobody likes a flat bottom.
For the back axle. Yeah. I understand. So this was completely flat. And so we took a minivan and I took it to a guy who did car stereos and gave him, I think, $20,000 or 20, I think the whole thing was $30,000.
Wow.
And he built an office in the back. So I had a computer, I had a keyboard, I had a printer.
That's crazy.
And a screen went up and down, all the windows closed, so I would make it impossible for myself to backseat drive. So I would never say, like, I would never think about, I wish you were going this route or the traffic here, the traffic there.
Sure.
Because if you're in your thing and you're working, it doesn't matter if it takes 20 minutes or if it takes 30 minutes.
It's like a Waymo
It's like a Waymo, exactly. Yeah.
So
exactly.
You're rolling calls, you're watching cuts, you're receiving
cuts,
faxes.
I'm doing my email. I'm printing out my boarding pass. You know, you could print out your little speech. I'm printing out my speech.
Yeah. And then if you need to park somewhere and there's no parking, what you did was you painted on the side of this van what?
Oh, I did. I painted. It was it said electric. It was an electrician van, but it said electric. Oh, commercial residential electrician. Yeah. So it looked like an electrician.
Blum Power or something like that.
Blum Power. No, yeah, exactly.
It looked like a commercial vehicle.
It looked like a commercial little handyman. It looked like a handyman.
Yeah, one cone and you're good.
You know who used to do that? You know who used to do that a lot and was really effective for Grant was the Stasi, the secret police in East Germany. And they would drive around and it would look like a bread truck and they would nab people off the street and stuff them in the back and then take them to the Stasi headquarters to torture them. You know what I mean? So this is...
The second part is a movie. We don't do that for real.
Okay. I actually bought speakers out of the back of some guy's van at a gas station. I did.
That could have been the guy who redid my van.
Did he have a flat bottom?
And they were not real. They were...
No, otherwise it wouldn't have been.
And they weren't real, right? They were fake. They were empty, right?
Yeah, they were empty, totally. Yeah.
Now, Jason, you say your struggles with LA, that implies you came from somewhere. Where is that place?
Well, I was born in LA. I lived here till I was five, and then I grew up in New York. I grew up until eighth grade. I went to public school in Dobbs Ferry in Westchester. And then I went to boarding school in Connecticut, which was very traumatic. And then I went to Vassar in Poughkeepsie. And then I lived in New York for my first 10 years of motion picture shenanigans. I lived in New York in the 90s. I graduated in 1991, so I was there from 91 to 2000. And then I moved to L.A. in 2000, and I've always thought about moving back, but I never really
But when you first moved to L.A., and you alluded to the fact that you lived downtown, for a while you lived in a hotel. You never wanted to commit.
I lived at the Ritz. Yeah, it was great. I still own the apartment if anyone wants to buy. I cannot sell that thing for the life of me.
What about the traffic about Laker games and stuff, though? Like when they were building crypto or Staples or whatever.
Oh, Laker games was amazing because I had great parking. I could just park at my house. I'm not really go to the Lakers, but you can go. I could go to Staples to see shows.
Yeah, but you couldn't get in and out.
Yeah, I loved it. It's a great. It was great. It was rare.
No, you mean if he was going out?
I know what you mean. Like if I was coming back and there was a Lakers game. Yeah. Sometimes it was a pain in the ass. It wasn't that bad. It wasn't that bad.
Now, do you not miss like the idea? It just sounds so ideal. First of all, I've seen the Vassar campus. I've and it's incredibly beautiful. I can only imagine the boarding school in Connecticut was also gorgeous. Like when you moved out here to Los Angeles, did you not miss? Because like we're recording this in the wintertime here in LA. And it's just, you know, the leaves are finally turning, but it's like that most of the year in back east. Do you not miss all of that?
Yes, I miss. That's what I'm saying. I struggle with living in LA. I miss it terribly. We're in Connecticut for the summer. I made a deal with my wife. My wife kind of prefers LA, but we made a deal that when school holidays, we go to the East Coast. So for all summer, I get to be on the East Coast, which I love.
But where you live in LA is like, feels like the East Coast.
Very
like
wooded.
You have wooded, gorgeous. Foresty. That's true. Yeah.
That's true. That's true.
We'll be right back.
And now back to the show.
You know what? Because you're a real estate agent, that's so funny, by the way. I didn't know that.
Wait, what?
He was a real estate agent.
I was a licensed real estate agent.
When?
Jason.
In New York.
I did it for Croman Real Estate, 1992, 1993. Yeah, it was an amazing job.
In New York City?
In New York City. That was after I sold cable TV. First, I sold cable TV door-to-door, commission only. I made $29 a sale. That's it. You only made money if you sold someone cable
for
TV.
For Time Warner?
In Chicago. No, Prime Chicago. Cable of Chicago.
Yeah.
Prime Cable of Chicago. Yeah. I loved commission only jobs. And that's why, the movies are the same thing. I don't get paid on our movies. I only get paid if the movies work. And that started when I was really young, shoveling driveways, shoveling driveways is a good example of it, is if I had to work for a landscaper and you get like, $5 an hour, or you could go shovel driveways and say, well, do your whole driveway, give me $10 or $15. Uh-huh. And I hated getting paid always like a salary work for hire. I always like getting paid for the exact work that I did.
Right.
Right. Huh.
So when everyone else was a waiter, I sold cable because I'm like, I can make more money if just pay me for the sales. And the same thing with the real estate. When everyone else was a realtor, I was a real estate agent because you only got paid if you rented people apartments. And I always loved sales.
That's cool. That's wild.
I still love sales.
Because you have the person, you have that, you're such an amazing personality that I wondered if you, how did that kind of aid you in what, when you crossed over to producing? Because you're such, you're so personable. Everybody loves you.
Yeah.
Thank you. The best, I always say that the best training I ever got for being a producer was real estate. Because you get, it's the same as being an actor. You get rejected all the time. So most people don't rent the apartment, right? Most movies you don't get, most movies you don't get made. So it gets you very used to being rejected and just you just got to keep trying. Very, very similar to acting. You got to keep trying and keep trying.
It is sales.
And then it works. It's sales.
Every part of this business is sales unless you just have a studio job and you're on the buying side.
But even them, they're selling a direct, they're trying to, studio people are salespeople too. They're selling, they want directors to direct things they don't necessarily want to do. They want actors to do things they don't necessarily want to act in, right? They want their boss to make a movie the boss doesn't necessarily want to make.
Yeah.
So it's everyone's selling. Everyone's selling to a certain degree.
And your company's so big now, you're doing both sales and you're buying and selling at the same time, right?
Yeah,
you have people coming in all the time trying to sort of sell you a pitch on something and you've got to make a decision. And do you like toggling back and forth between that?
I do. I like toggling back and forth. Buying,
Would you get a bumper sticker that says I like to toggle? Or I'd rather be toggling.
I actually paint that on my van. I like to be toggled. I'm like Jason. I like to do both sides. I like to
toggling
do both
electric.
Sides.
Toggling electric.
Toggle electric.
The long lost switch.
Let me ask you this. Okay, I want to get into this. What is the current? You and I have talked about this before. I said, well, can't we do a comedy? I remember about a year and a half ago or something, we had lunch and I said, can we make a comedy? You said, there's no money in it. And I said, really? I mean, in effect, you said that. The state of movies.
There's no money for me in it.
There's no money for you in it. Right. Yeah. No, I got it.
You're not paid. You're not getting paid until the movie.
I got it.
I'm not the comedian.
Yeah, no, I got it. I read that. But what is the state of theatrical films on this planet right now from your perspective? Can people still make them? Can they make money? Do people want to go and see them?
Okay, let's just clear the record. On the comedy, my response was not, I can't make money in it, although that is true. But the reason that we don't do comedy is because I think horror really works. You don't need massive, massive stars for theatrical horror.
Yeah, because it's about
TV,
the idea.
Different thing. TV, comedy, different thing. But for a comedy to work, comedy is just very hard to work in movie theaters. There's so much great comedy. All of you guys have been part of a lot of it on television. horror doesn't really work on TV. There's a lot of great comedy on TV. So to make, and for a comedy to work theatrically, I still think it's very hard anyway, and you need a huge star so that it becomes expensive.
And there was a time, as you
I don't like making expensive movies.
As we know, there was a time, especially in the early aughts, where there were a ton of big comedy films driven by big stars.
Yeah.
But as we know, especially if we go back and look at a lot of them, it's hard. I've always maintained it's hard to make a good comedy film because of the nature of making film does not lend itself to that element of surprise, et cetera. In television, you have to make it quickly. You have to keep moving. And so it works for comedy in that way. Making movies, it can be often tedious and quite boring. So it's funny that comedy works on TV and horror does not, and vice versa.
Yeah.
But what about the state of theatrical movies, of film?
Well, this is constantly on my mind. And I actually texted, I texted Aaron this morning, you know, who runs all the AMC theaters, because they had their biggest weekend ever.
Right.
And I keep trying, I've been asking everyone, I trust on that. Like, is this like an anomaly, or do you think?
Yeah, but look at what worked. It's Wicked, which was an IP already established for 20 years. Gladiator 2, which was a massive movie. Moana, which was an institution in and of itself.
Two sequels.
Well, that's different. If you're saying people don't want original movies,
they don't.
Like, they say
right.
that they want them, but actions right. speak louder than words.
That's right.
People want.
Familiarity.
The reason they're all sequels and remakes, that's what they want. That's what the audience is. The audience is showing up to that consistently, and even more so now. If you look at horror this year, one horror movie in 12 months really hit. Original. There were six or seven sequels that worked, but one original horror. Long Legs.
Yeah,
Long Legs.
I want to see.
I think you'd have to go back 10 years to see where only one original horror movie worked. I mean,
Have there been any outliers in terms of films that horror and or otherwise that have done well in the last, let's say, since the pandemic, since 2020, in the last 4.5 years? Anything?
Well, yeah, Five Nights at Freddy's was last year's our highest grossing movie of all time.
Wow!
And that was that was the original.
No, but it's based on a game.
Based on an IP, yeah.
But based on a game.
Yeah. But that did $300 million.
I'm trying to think.
We had our best. Megan was one. Megan was a huge movie. Black Phone was a huge movie.
Yeah,
Quiet
Black
Place
Phone.
Is not our movie. Huge movie. Yeah. Conjuring. Those were post. You know, Quiet Place was this year. Those were all post pandemic. Horror franchises. We had our Insidious 5 last year. Yes, it was the highest grossing Insidious movie of all five of them. And that was
last
year.
And it was the most Insidious.
Most.
Of the five.
By far the most. I'm sure you've seen all five.
Five, it was the most Insidious.
The most.
So Jason, without getting too much into the weeds for folks like Tracy, can you speak, what do you think the current appetite is in the business for these trick deals where... instead of an actor getting paid a bunch of money up front, like when you're talking about this scenario with comedy, where by having a big star in there, it becomes sort of cost prohibitive. But I think some actors, Cameron Diaz is one of the famous ones that did it for Bad Teacher, where she basically didn't take a lot of money up front, but then had this definition for the back end of a profit participant, where if the film did really well, she got paid a lot of money, and she did. Because I know your model, without getting into stuff you may or may not want to talk about, you seem to be open to this type of structure in the interest of trying to get as many at-bats as possible in the hopes of finding a great movie.
Well, no, it's more than that. Like, that's our main tenet of our entire business, is no one gets paid up front, including us, just like my real estate and just like my just like my cable TV. Like, no one gets paid, or you get paid minimum scale. And if the movie works okay, you get paid okay. And if the movie works really well, you should get paid more than you've ever made before. That's our whole...
What about your toggle business?
The toggle business is also an if-come business, by the way. Okay. It's a fantastic if-come business. Yes.
But I remember you saying that. I remember you, Blum, talking about, who I won't name, but an actor that who was in one of your films in the last 5-10 years, who's a well-known actor, who you said they made more money doing this. They took nothing up front. They made more money doing this than they'd made on anything
they'd ever done. That's true. And that's how we keep getting people to work for us and take a gamble.
And you didn't mind doing that, right? You didn't mind writing those checks to that
actor.
The
greatest thing I can ever do is if I write the biggest check to anyone's ever made on my
movie,
it's like complaining about paying a lot of taxes. Like if you're paying a lot of taxes, things are going well.
Amen. Yeah. Right. So then why do you think that's not more universally embraced?
Well, it is. So I wrote an article in the New York Times. Yeah. It was an op-ed. I was very proud of it. And you can go back and read it.
I don't read.
Of Tracy. No, Tracy can go back and read it.
Tracy.
And
read it to me.
Or I'll read it to you. Yeah.
For New York Times.
And it was all about the fact that I believe in my heart, there are no rules to making movies and TV shows in my mind except one, which is if people have equity in what they're making as opposed to being paid up front, what they're making is better. It just is.
Absolutely. I totally agree.
And that view has been very out of fashion until the streaming correction, which happened about 18 months ago. But
explain
to put it in very broad terms, starting in about 2010, there was an enormous amount of money. Wall Street gave not just Netflix, but all the streamers money, not based on their profit, but based on subscriber numbers. Mm-hmm. And the way to get subscriber numbers was to spend more and more and more and more. And so the industry as a whole spent more money than it was making because it wasn't using profit as a metric.
Right. Okay.
You with me?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
18 months ago, when Netflix stock dropped, it's now back to beyond what it was before, which is going to tie into what I'm saying. But 18 months ago, Wall Street decided that's dumb. Streaming companies and media companies need to be like every other company, which means they need to take in more money than they spend. Mm-hmm. So we're no longer going to reward you for streaming numbers or anything else or what you might eventually make in streaming. We're going to reward you for what actually makes money so that all the people who make content had to take a much closer look at their budgets. And the budgets are now all coming down a lot. And the quickest, most effective way to bring a budget down is to pay the people who make the most money, which are the actors, the writers, the directors, and the producers, people who make the most money much less, unless the thing that they make makes money. Mm-hmm. And that's now.
But the trick with streaming is that the ability to calculate what a profit is becomes vague, yes?
Yes, but it's not it. That's such gobbledygook. It's the easiest thing in the world to create. You just, they have the data of everything. You just have to decide. A penny a minute. A penny an hour.
Everybody universally decides on.
It's way easier to make up a profit definition. Yes.
Here's the other thing that's interesting about it.
I got carried away. Go ahead.
I think this is a great area. This is the other thing, because it's I think that it's pretty cynical in the sense that that the streamers, like you said, were given exorbitant amounts of cash to try to do that, to grow their business and to get subs. Well, it turns out that they figured out within that time, and this is probably 5 years ago, they realized when they started to offer things, ad-supported customers, they realized that their ad-supported customer was worth more to them than a subscriber. That they would get more return on it. And so eventually what the consumer doesn't understand, that eventually we are going to be going back to the old formula from before.
Network television. Yeah.
We're just coming to the tail end of this huge fucking cycle that was virtually meaningless. And now we're back to ad-supported viewing is going to be the thing that they are going after, et cetera. Am I right?
Streaming is just basically an electrified VCR. That's all it did.
Exactly.
You can watch anything whenever you want, but otherwise it's going to be like it was before. I don't know if I totally agree with that, but it's changed a lot, and it's changed not very much. I do agree with most.
Yeah, because all the people that work at the streamers worked at the networks.
Well, that's true.
They're almost all the same people.
That's true. That culture has shifted, and all that stuff that they said that separated them and made them different at all the streamers now does not separate them or make them different. And it's very, very difficult.
Well, but hang on. I mean, we're talking about something that for the most part is subscriber supported. The ad
still is.
Supported
still is.
Viewer is a small fraction of that, and
they want it to be bigger.
Not as a part of the general population, because people still watch a lot of network TV. But for streaming, ad supported streaming is a smaller piece than subscription for sure.
Yeah, and it's still hard to argue with, you know, having 250 million people spending $15 a month is a pretty yummy business if you can retain those people month after month after month after month. And it really is, it's a retention business. It's not an ad selling business.
It'll be both. You'll have, and by the way, movies are different than in a different category than what you guys are talking about. Studios is different, but there will be a bunch of people, a bunch of subscribers paying a premium for no ads. And then there'll be a bunch of people watching programming with ads for either less or no money.
Yeah.
JB, I don't disagree with you. What I'm saying is that is what they have decided that they want to move towards because it is more profitable. And mm-hmm. I guarantee you, all of them are going to tend towards the thing that is more profitable. It's what they want.
But if it was more profitable, then why wouldn't linear television be in better health?
Well, there are things that are showing up to be, that are proving that, which are things like Tubi and all these sort of fast channel types of things. These are proving to be really effective ways that people are watching stuff who don't want to have to pay the subscriber a monthly fee and who are willing to watch ads. And that kind of stuff, that stuff is growing. It's all about
Wait,
what's
what is
available.
Tubi? Do I have Tubi?
That's exactly. A long callback. Yeah. That is it. That's like a 3-year callback.
Your callback. Jason Blum, I want to talk about your stuff because I'm a fan. And so, first of all,
okay,
I want
well
to
start.
Wow. Your guest.
I'm going to. So,
okay. He's got 17 million questions for you.
I do. Paranormal Activity is one of my favorite movies. Okay. I watched it a year ago with my
Quote
nieces.
It.
Yep. Quote it. Well, just, I could talk about it all day long.
Then start.
Okay.
You keep saying, you're like a rapper who goes, I'm going to rock the microphone. Wait till I get on the mic. And you're like, okay, you've got the microphone. Fucking do it. The fuck?
I'm gonna rock
and when I get on the microphone, I'm really going to, then fucking do it.
That's how I felt about this mystery product coming out.
I
know, that's true. Fair enough. By the way, I'm a hypocrite in my core.
Jason, tell me about it, because wasn't it true that the studio wanted you to remake it or they didn't like it or whatever? And how did you convince them that they had gold and all that kind of stuff? Tell me the
story. Paranormal Activity. I'll do that.
And isn't that the one that kind of launched the quicker version of it?
But yeah. That was what launched the company. But I had a guy, this very sweet fellow who I'm still friends with, and a very good producer, a guy named Steven Schneider, and he was a horror expert. I had a deal at Paramount, and he had a deal with us, and we had a deal with them. And Paramount, whatever, was ignoring me. And this guy, Steven, showed me this movie, showed me Paranormal Activity, and I saw it on a DVD at my house. And it'd been at a couple festivals and whatever. And
you were living in New York at the time?
I was living on Sunset Plaza in my bachelor pad on Sunset Plaza. It was before I moved downtown.
Got it.
And I had passed on Blair Witch Project.
I can't believe that. No. And now you're remaking it.
Yes.
No.
We're trying. We'll see.
Crazy.
Yeah. No.
But yeah, I passed on it, and I was never, my boss just was like, you idiot, for a year, a year I had to listen to that. But when I saw Paranormal, I had this oh my God, what if this is Blair Witch? And mm-hmm. I didn't say this movie's going to be, I didn't think the movie's going to be anything of what it turned out to be, but I definitely thought there was something to it, and I thought it was worth screening it in front of an audience. That's what I learned from Blair Witch, is if you see anything somewhat that might be good, throw it in front of an audience.
Yes, because you love testing.
I love testing.
Yeah.
So so anyway,
yeah.
The smile on his face when you said that.
No, but you, it's testing, true. I've heard you talk about that.
Testing's my dream. Yeah.
Yes.
I don't like friends and family testing. I like testing with, you know, real objective real people.
Testing the film in front of a random regular audience. And then they all fill out what they liked, what they didn't like, and you get a number.
I'm not such a big fan of that, but I like watching the movie with a regular crowd.
Got it. It's the best feedback ever. Yeah.
So anyway, I have this itch I want to scratch on this movie, and I met the director, and he had basically sold it for $100,000 to direct a DVD to IFC, by the way, who never forgave. A guy named Jonathan Searing was there at the time. He never forgave me for this because I said, it's the deal done. He said, no, it's not done, but I think I'm going to just sell it for $100,000. I said, I think the movie should be in theaters. I told him the Blair Witch story. I said, give me a cut of whatever you make after you make $500,000. So I'm not going to cost you anything unless I make five times the money you've already made. Then I want a piece. But until then, nothing. And let me come on and partner, see if I can get it made with you. Anyway, 3 years goes by. No one wants the movie. I do the movie with the audience like I want to do. It's very clear if you see the movie with an audience, it's going to be a crazy hit. It's very clear.
Yeah.
But I'm the schmuck producer. I call everyone and say, you got to watch this movie with an audience. They say, well, we've already seen it. We have got the DVD here. It's sitting on my assistant's desk and the movie sucks. And
so good.
That's the way a lot of conversations go in Hollywood.
Wow. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
We'll be right back.
All right, back to the show.
So 3 years into this, I get Paramount won't return my calls, it still drives me crazy that the movie wound up with them because they hated the movie forever. Uh-huh. But I get DreamWorks. This guy, Adam Goodman, and
I know Adam.
You know Adam. You remember Adam,
course.
Right?
Great guy. Made a couple movies with him.
Guy. Adam and Ashley Brooks, and they're working at DreamWorks, and they really into the movie. I give them credit for that. And they said, but we're going to remake the movie. You know, we'll put famous people in the movie. Movies are found footage movies, so I don't know how it could work with famous people. But
right.
I say this is my flash of brilliance, of which I've had, you know, two in my career, but this was one of them. And I said, I will, first of all, you got to pay me $150,000 because I need more than 100 for Oren. Mm-hmm. So I got to get him an extra $50,000. Second, you got to put the original movie on the DVD. When we remake the new movie, you got to put the original movie on that DVD because I want it out there somewhere.
Oh, wow.
Third, you have to test the original Paranormal Activity. You have to test screen the film in Burbank with 300 people. And you, Adam, and it was Stacey Snyder, his boss. And Stacey Snyder, you guys have to be there. And not because I want to release the movie, because if I said that, they would have said, you're an idiot. I said, because when we remake the movie, I want to invite the writers who are going to write the remake. And I want all you executives to be there with the writers so we can decide which parts we're going to redo and which parts we're going to leave. Right?
I love that. I love that.
And then I said to the director, Oren, who I give the Oren so much credit for sticking with me all this time. You know, 3 years into this, he had $150,000 3 years ago. He's sleeping in my guest house for half the time. He was in San Diego, but he used to sleep in my guest house all the time for all these dumb meetings we would have where people would say the movies doesn't work. And I said to Oren, I will bet you, you know, a nickel that if Adam and Stacey watch this movie with a recruited audience, was impossible to do. If they watch this movie with a recruited audience, they're never going to talk about the remake again. Just trust me. And by the way, worst case scenario, if they do, you're going to get $150 instead of $100. So it's no lose. And I still remember Oren, Steven, and I went to this screening. It was in Burbank, and Stacey was there. And fucking people went insane. And three people left the theater because they were too scared.
Right.
And the movie ends, and everyone goes nuts. And Stacey, I will never forget, Stacey Snyder is at the bottom of the screen. And she's literally, the writers were there for the remake. They disappear. And Stacey has the three of us pitching us the 30-second TV spots of how she's going to sell the movie for the theatrical release.
Right.
Wow. The movie as is.
As is.
Yeah.
The remake's off the table. And then Spielberg gets the results of the test. He sees it like 2 days later. He loves it. Right. And DreamWorks is releasing our movie. And then in another thing, I won't go into it now, but DreamWorks then and Paramount split up, and DreamWorks went to Disney, and Disney DreamWorks could not have their first release be Paranormal Activity.
Right.
So we were saddled with Paramount and another year of shenanigans, which is how it wound up with them.
No way, another year from that moment?
It was a year. They said they weren't going to release it. They blackmailed us. They blackmailed us into releasing the movie. I've never really been this straightforward about it, but I will be now. We had, based off that test screening, we were able to sell $5 million of international sales. So based off the fact that it was going to get a domestic release by a studio, we had $5 million in sales. All the France and Germany, we sold territory by territory, right?
You're already in profit.
We had,
by a lot.
Oh my God, in profit, but the movie cost $15,000. So so we had 18 months to get the release, which, by the way, no problem. Stacy and Steven Spielberg loved the movie. DreamWorks is releasing the movie. Boom. Disney, we're at Paramount. Paramount's like, we're not releasing the movie.
Wow.
And it went on, and they—
Why were they opposed to releasing it?
They thought it was a piece of shit, like everybody else.
But what about this?
And the only savior was that when Disney and DreamWorks broke up, Adam Goodman and Ashley Brooks moved
went
from DreamWorks to Paramount. So internally, they were doing what I was doing on the outside. So on the outside, I was, and internally they were saying, guys, you got to, but everyone was saying to them, you guys are insane, don't do this movie.
Uh-huh.
And basically what happened, in retrospect, history is rewritten, like they did this strategic smart release. No, Adam and Ashley got them to agree to pay $1 million in P&A to do this tiny release of the movie.
Print and advertise.
And we contributed like, I think, 500 or 600. They came to us and say, we'll only put in $1 million if you take 500 of the $5 million you have from international, which we know you're going to lose in 4 months, and you put 500 up and we'll put 500 up and we'll put it in 13 theaters. Demand it, which was only, that was, that the whole marketing thing was just like, how can we spend as little money as possible to get this movie out there?
I mean, isn't it amazing you have this
That's
thing
actually, I've never really, really told
it's incredible.
That part of the story, but it's amazing. Incredible
but, thing. But isn't it amazing that you have this thing and what it takes to get people to believe in it, and you just didn't stop, and isn't it fascinating that you can see it, but the people in charge can never see it? Why is that?
Well, no, it's, you know, that those stories, though, I mean, you guys know these stories, too. I have a little, like, it's always annoying, the story. There's so many stories of I believed in it and nobody didn't.
Right,
and
sure.
It's it favors the producer so much. Mm-hmm. Because executives, their job is to look at 400 things and pick 10. So it's they have to not believe in 390 things.
Right.
It's not really fair. Producer's job is to pick 20 things, believe in all of them, and 10 go, you know, whatever it is. So I always think those stories are kind of dopey, and including this story. Like,
well,
I don't,
it's fascinating, though.
It's fascinating, except that it's not like, I give myself credit for that one thing of you know, putting that language in the test screening. But anyone, any of you or anyone, if you saw the movie with an audience before it came out, you would know it was a hit.
That's
it's just
what
I
saying.
Couldn't get anyone into the theater.
Right.
But there was no genius of knowing that.
But you did, and it still took all of that work to get it, you know.
Well,
a
I had
wide
no
release.
Clout. I had no clout. You know, it's like this little, you know, this guy with no, like, I had no track record. I produced 6 independent movies. They were all terrible. One was okay, and 5 were horrible. So it was like, why am I gonna waste my night and be away from my kids by this schmuck producer when everyone in my team has seen the movie and they think it's not good? Which, by the way, which I get too.
Yeah.
How under the hood do you like to get creatively, as far as like script notes and edit notes and all that?
You know, I hate being on set. I like running my production company.
Right.
I give usually a couple of notes on a script, a few notes on a cut, depending on the cut. Sometimes I give more notes on the finished movie than the script. But Cooper Samuelson, who you know well, he's the great Cooper Samuelson. We've been together 10 years, and he really runs the movie. He does run the movie company, and he is very, he and his team. are extremely involved.
What would you say is your fastball then? Like identifying a filmmaker, a concept, a script. Where do you think your greatest talent lies? If it's not getting in there under the hood, day to day, quality control, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I'm a great picker. I'm a good picker. I'm a very good picker. I am a good picker. So that is quality control. And I'm a good seller. You know, I'm not talking about, it's easy to raise money for the movies now, but I'm good at talking people into working for me, you know, for us, you know, I'm good at it. But it's an easy thing for me. It's an easy thing to sell because I believe it. I really believe in our model and I believe in the company and I believe the model leads to better movies and shows.
Yeah.
And the only thing that I was going to say is there are really no other companies that just do one thing. And that's been a huge advantage to us. And now, you know, the only other company that really does just do one thing like we do at scale is James Wan's Atomic Monster. And now Atomic Monster and Blumhouse, you know, we put the companies together 16 months ago. And it's a huge advantage to not do horror as like a side hustle.
Uh-huh.
You know, which that's what the studios do, obviously, but also most other production companies, they do all the thing, and we do the occasional horror movie. And that's all we do. I see every horror movie.
Well, that's of course you're good at, because that is what you do. You're a specialty. You understand it. And now you're doing it with James Wan. Talk a little bit about your relationship with James Wan and how that came to be.
Well, I'm interested in growing the company, and I really felt like it kind of ties together a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about. I don't believe you can make, let's just talk about movies and not TV for a second. I don't believe you can make movies. You can make more movies that are good by just hiring more people. Right. Mm-hmm. And remember, we only get paid if our movies are good or if they work. If they don't work, we don't get paid. So for us to go from 4 or 5 movies a year to 7 or 8 movies a year, we have to keep the quality the same. If the quality goes down, it's a disaster. So the only way for us to grow is to go from 4 or 5 to 6 or 7. And it was my view that the only way to get to 6 or 7 was to bring in a partner, not just to hire 4 more executives, but to bring in a partner who was a, you know, visionary who was doing this on his own.
Right.
And if you take Blumhouse and Atomic Monster, and if those two companies just continue to do what the companies have done on their own the last 10 years, you know, it's like 60% of theatrically released horror movies have been done by those two companies.
Yeah, talking about James Wan,
he's a massive director, separate business, Aquaman, Fast and Furious, right? But he birthed Insidious with us, which is how I met him. But Atomic Monster is best known as the production company behind the Conjuring universe. So all the Conjuring movies, Annabelle, La Llorona. The Nun 2. Uh-huh. Nun 2, you know, no one ever talks about Nun 2 was the second highest grossing horror movie of all time last year. $270 million.
Wow.
The Nun 2. No one talks about it in Hollywood.
Yeah.
So anyway, so next year, 25 is our first year where our release date slate will be, we're up to our 8 movies. We have Wolfman, we have 2 original movies, we have a Chris Landon movie called Drop, and then we have Megan, then we have Black Phone, then we have Five Nights at Freddy's 2, and then these guys have a Mortal Kombat movie and a Conjuring 5 movie.
Wow.
So next year is our big year.
What percentage of box office does horror make up now domestically?
It's like $1 billion a year.
$1 billion a year.
Percentage?
It's about 10%.
Good Lord.
So every award show where we're lauding all these other people, they should do, the first 5 minutes should just be a standing O for you and Juan, just to say thank you for keeping us all at work.
Yes,
and now let's
totally
get
true.
To the Oscars.
Yeah, yeah, for and sure.
They 5 minutes standing O, Blum.
Right. And they was starting a long time ago. They got really cinematic and less sort of like, you know, the rap they used to get with slasher and exploitative and whatnot. They're like beautifully made films now.
Yeah, there's less TNA. I will say that. I mean, Not to knock it.
Now, do you know, I heard, maybe somebody sort of talked to you about this on the show, but do you know, I heard that kids don't want TNA in movies now because there's so much of it on the internet that they're not, they don't want TNA in movies anymore.
Wow, no kidding.
That makes sense.
Real progress.
Yeah, and they don't want their driver's license either because there's Uber. You know, if you can get it somewhere else, I don't want it here.
Jason Blum, I'm a big fan of Get Out, and you know, we don't have time to go through it because we're going to let you go, but I didn't know
there
was...
Oh my God, you're already over time. Jason, you're very compelling.
This might be the quickest we've ever gotten to it and feel like we're just starting.
Yeah, we really are. I got so much more to go into.
God, I thought you were going to be a disappointing guest.
I know. It's been 4 years.
Bateman kept saying, I'm not going to respond to this guy's emails.
I can't respond to him. Don't make a deal.
No, I can imagine before the show, I said, did Blum email you the other week? Fucking, like, oh, my God.
Who's going to break first and then Sean? Oh, my God. Jesus. Sean broke first. Sean had a question, though. Ask it.
Caller?
It's too long to get into, and I can probably just Google it, but I did not know there was a different ending to Get Out.
There was. That was a note I had. There was an end date to Get Out where Daniel died. Wound up in jail. Something terrible.
Did they write it? Did they shoot it?
Yeah, we shot it. It was at the test screening. And we tested it. And me and my very, like, you know, not thoughtful self, I come bounding down the aisle. I'm like, Jordan, the movie's great. You cannot leave this end. I didn't hedge. I didn't wait. I was like, you have to change the end. I said, Daniel is too good. Everyone is in love with him. The movie's amazing. And you cannot end him with him in jail. Like, it's just, it's horrible.
Jordan say, yeah, but that was your idea.
he said, but that was your note. No.
You sent me that note from the back of your van. Said you were on Cahuenga.
You idiot. No, he was a man. No, I pitched him some horrible idea of what it should be to keep him alive.
So in the original, she, I forget the name of the character, the girl in it, the lead girl.
Allison Williams.
Allison Williams. I haven't seen her in a long time, but she ends up getting him in jail. Is that what it is?
I think the end he's in jail. He winds up in jail. Like there's a scene of him like in
jail. Yeah, it's so good how it is.
So sad. And Jordan, you know, a month later he had a new idea for the end. He reshot it and
what a filmmaker he is.
Amazing.
God, he's
so good. Filmmaker.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Tell me your favorite horror film.
No, just a softball right here at the end.
Jesus,
yeah, just so we can alienate everybody he works with, other than the person he names.
Any funny stories of you going up on a lion on stage?
I like Hitchcock movies. Those are my favorite. Yeah. You know, in terms of like those. Those are my inspiration movies. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So listen. Yeah, you got to get out of here. We got to get out of here.
What Blumhouse movies are we going to go to? Are people going to come and see in 2025? Tell us now.
He just did.
Well, I did. No, Wolfman. Wolfman is January. It's great. It's Lee Whannell who did The Invisible Man. It's amazing.
Is that Julia Garner?
Julia Garner and Chris Abbott. Yeah.
Okay. So Wolfman is January. Okay.
Wolfman is January. This original movie by Chris Landon who did Happy Death Day. Michael Landon's son. Called Drop with Megan Fahey, which is great.
Drop.
And then we have Megan 2.
That's
a summer release.
Summer release. Oh, then we have Black Phone 2.
Ethan Hawke.
That's Scott Derrickson with the great Ethan Hawke.
Back is the
grabber.
Yeah,
okay.
Wow, I thought they caught him. Yeah, I thought they grabbed
then
him.
Then we have Five Nights at Freddy's 2. Now, clearly you guys missed the first one, but you've got 12 months to see the first and then see the second. You know,
Ten
it's
Nights
be
at
a
Freddy's.
Monster.
Christmas release.
Christmas release. This
if you're doing the math.
December release. And our friends at Atomic Monster have the next Conjuring movie. Have Mortal Kombat.
It's a full slate of great movies.
It's a monster year.
You should consider doing the year after for Five Nights at Freddy. Do it as a Christmas movie. 12 Nights at Freddy. Tie it into Christmas.
Yeah.
It's a great idea. That's a freebie.
You're welcome. It's a free one. It's a free one from us to you.
Blumhouse is bringing you all the movies you want to see. Go and see them. We urge you. We urge you to go and see him. And you are an unbelievable guest.
Well, you were an unbelievable
guy.
It took me four years, but there was a lot of pressure. I had to make it worth it.
You delivered. Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
You delivered.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Say hi to Lauren, please.
Okay, well, I will. Lots of love to all of you.
Love you.
And congrats, by the way, your new daughter.
Thank you. Thank you, our little daughter.
Yeah, bye, buddy.
All right, thanks, guys.
Bye, bye.
Bye, pal. The man has a gift for gab. You know, we could expand this to four hosts and very easily come in.
But aside from buying a movie from him, I would buy a house from him.
I know.
Yeah.
I'd let him shovel my driveway.
Yeah.
I'd let him shovel my driveway.
I'd let him fix my wiring. With the electric van. No, a very, very good person. And so is his wife. And it's just... I don't know.
A good guy.
Yeah.
I mean, and a perfect example of how to succeed, you know, like when you're kind of starting out in this business, if there's any young producers out there, it's a perfect person to kind of, you know, look for inspiration of how he did it.
I know, but it's like, how would you say, like, you know, he does have, I was trying to break down, like, what's the recipe to become Jason Blum?
His personality.
But not to belittle his ability in the business,
but people skills is an enormous
part of this industry, huge, no matter what huge. Lane you're in.
That's true, and I will say this, and I will say he has I was thinking about it too throughout the thing, like, what is it makes him so successful? Other than he says that he's a good picker, he's got tremendous people skills, he understands... But he's really smart.
Yeah.
And so...
You have to be a lot of things, and he's a lot of things.
So, like, it's a good place to start is being really smart.
Yeah.
You know, JB, nothing?
Nice. Huh? Oh, no, I was looking at a text, I thought,
well,
are we
now we know why you're not him.
And attentive.
Now we know why you're not him, because he would never do that.
No. No, not at all. Well, Rob Armyarv, stop fucking texting me while we're doing the wrap-up. God damn it.
Rob was texting you.
We have pickups. We have pickups we have to get to. So let's get to a buy. Sean, you have anything on the list?
I don't have anything on the list that fits.
Really?
How about, let's try a new thing. I'm going to give you a word here that I'd like for you to work into a buy, okay? And it's the word is bifurcate. Okay, Will, would you like to go first?
We did that one last week, right?
Okay, how about...
How about a buyback? What's a buyback?
Buyback.
What is a buyback?
Somebody with two backs? A buyback would be if you wanted to purchase something back from somebody.
Oh, well, I would never want to do that to one of his films. I would never want to go into his film after seeing something so spectacular and ask for a...
You would never need to.
I would never need to go into his thing.
I feel like this is going to be really lazy.
I would never ask for or need a buyback. Buyback. No. We all saw it coming.
Instead of get out, it could be called bye.
What's that, Michael?
Instead of get out, it could be called bye.
Bye. There you go.
Oh, yes, it didn't clear. It was already taken. Oh. But yeah, the original title for Get Out was bye.
That's good.
Smart.
Smartless is 100% organic and artisanally handcrafted by Michael Grant Terry, Rob Armjarv, and Bennett Barbago.
Smartless.